The Minister for Social Protection, Heather Humphreys, and Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, Michael McGrath, have announced the details of four separate lump sum payments which will be paid this week. The payments will benefit older people, working families and people with disabilities. In total, over 865,000 people will benefit from this week's cost of living payments. The lump sum payments being paid are a €500 disability support grant, a €400 fuel allowance lump sum payment, a €500 lump sum working family payment, and a €200 lump sum payment to be paid to people in receipt of the living alone allowance. Well, Minister for Finance Pascal Donoghue joins us now. Good morning to you, Minister.
Good morning, Owen. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks indeed for joining us on the programme. Is this a case of the government playing catch up because they didn't give the necessary funds in budget 2023 and have now had to give out some more lump sum payments?
These payments were announced as part of our Budget 2023 programme. So these were a core part of what we were looking to do on Budget Day. And they reflect the reality that your listeners and you, I know, will be aware of, that as we move into November and we move into later in the year, even though it has been untypically mild, it's going to get colder, the nights will be longer, and people will need additional help. And these payments are designed to give that help to those who we know will need the help the most.
And do you think it's enough?
I believe it can make a difference. I'm always aware that those who are in receipt of these payments will always make the case that they feel they need more and they deserve more. And, of course, I understand why that case has been made. But we can't do everything. But what we want to do is try and do enough to be of help. And the payments that we're making overall are on top of the €200 energy credit payments that we've made available to everybody, meaning that the total package of support, everything that we're doing, is around €1.2 billion of your listeners' money. So that's a very large amount of money, and I hope and believe it's capable of making a difference.
Okay, when will these payments come into effect for listeners, Minister?
Oh, beginning this week. So over the next number of weeks, and in fact for many this week, they'll see these four changes come into their purse and wallet. So for the vast majority of your listeners, they should receive these double payments this week.
Because I know from an article in the Irish Times back in September, they did a survey where more than 1 million people say that they're struggling to make ends meet. And with the first question that I put to you, I wonder, was it maybe too little too late to bring these measures forward now in November, when we've seen people have been struggling for the last number of months, and with 1 million people saying they were struggling to make ends meet in September?
But I guess the point I'd make there, Owen, is these measures are only the latest of what we have done over a number of months. So all the way back to where we were before the summer, we brought out the original €200 reduction in your energy bill. We cut VAT on gas and electricity. We reduced excise to try to lessen the increase in prices that was happening in the cost of diesel and petrol for so many of your listeners.
But there was still 1 million people struggling to make ends meet.
Oh, I fully appreciate that, Owen, and I appreciate that for so many at the moment. The cost of living is going up. It's more expensive for people to do the shop, to put fuel in the car, to keep their house warm and make ends meet. Understand that completely. But the point I would just aim to make in the context of this kind of need is that what we're trying to do at these difficult moments is actually deliver for people to make a difference. And we've tried to get the balance right between supporting the social and real need that many of your listeners at the moment have, but at the same time keeping our economy stable and supporting our economy as we get out of COVID, hopefully, but the challenges of Brexit, be able to deal with them while at the same time dealing with the consequences of the war and the people in Ukraine. So we have crisis after crisis, challenge after challenge, many of which are emitting from circumstances outside of our country. But as we are dealing with that and those, we're trying to provide this help for those who we know need it.
Okay, before we move on to other issues, just with the cost of living crisis, are we likely to see more lump sum payments in the new year from the government?
So the government will evaluate where we are early in the new year. You know, we do hope to be in a position that the increased prices and costs that are a cause of concern for so many at the moment, that we begin to see that pressure lessen in the new year. And what we will do is, as we move through February, March and April, we'll just evaluate where we stand. I'm sure there will be many needs and many issues that we still need to respond back to, but we'll make the decision then when we're clearer on where our country stands.
Okay, what about housing then, the housing crisis, Minister? As we know, we've been in the situation for the last number of years. Dr. Rory Hearn from Maynooth University, in an article and an opinion piece that he wrote, says the strongest indication that the current policy has failed is the worsening housing crisis that has extended across Irish society. This includes low-income families and individuals that are being made homeless. Indeed, there's an article in the Irish Independent today to say, or the Irish Times, I should say, that the government's capital expenditure programme on housing is likely to significantly undershoot its target this year, according to data obtained from the Department of Housing. The housing situation is a mess, is it?
It's a huge challenge. Absolutely acknowledge the fact that we have to do better and we need to do better in terms of building more homes, meeting the needs that are there for so many at the moment.
Why are we undershooting targets then?
Well, I'd make the case, actually, if you look at the targets that we have at the moment, we will actually get to a point where we can deliver them overall as the year goes on. So if I look at where we are just on planning permissions at the moment, we now have 44,715 homes that have received planning permission up to this summer. That's an 11% increase in where we were same time a year ago. And in this year alone, we've 27,400 homes that have actually been commenced. So we are seeing a significant increase in the number of homes that have been built in our country this year. We're seeing a really big increase in the number of homes that have been delivered through our local authorities, and a big increase in the number of homes that have been purchased by first-time buyers.
We're seeing an increase, but we're also seeing an increase in the number of people who are being made homeless and losing their homes. So it's not keeping up with, like, there's an inordinate amount of people who are in an emergency accommodation, record levels. So is the supply meeting the demand?
It's not meeting the demand. And that
will
is
it meet the demand?
It's not meeting the demand at the moment, and if it was meeting the demand at the moment, then we wouldn't have the kind of issues that we're trying to improve and make a difference to at the moment. Will it meet demand in the future? I believe that it will. And the reason why I believe that it will is I look at the progress that we are making across this year at the moment in the number of new homes that are being built, and the government is determined that in the years ahead we will maintain that momentum. We are now in a situation where we have the fifth highest level of completion of homes at the moment of any country in the European Union. We're seeing the number of apartments that are being built at the moment go up by 150% from where we are at the moment to where we are in the same quarter a year ago. And I know these are very abstract figures to be making the case for at the moment, but what it just means overall is more homes being built in our country. And as we maintain the progress in getting more homes built, it will, over time, help us meet the huge, intense demands that are there at the moment for different forms of housing. But I anchor all of this, Owen, in an appreciation that for housing, for so many at the moment, it's a cause of such worry and such concern. I did hope we would be in a better place coming out of the pandemic, but we're seeing the cost of building homes go up all over the world. We're seeing interest rates at the moment go up all over the world as well. That doesn't help in our efforts. But even with those challenges that we have to rise to, we're still building more homes month by month by month, and we will keep at that.
Okay, we also have the issue of Ukrainians coming into the country, and we absolutely understand that it's a unique situation. The government are acting in real time. We've heard all of these terms coming from government. So what we need is answers whether or not we have the capability and the capacity to house people who were already homeless in this country before the war in Ukraine, and also how we're going to house 60,000 refugees.
Well, we've made incredible progress, and so much of this is due to the resilience and kindness of Irish people in responding back to the challenge of people who are fleeing murder, who are fleeing the destruction of their homes, and are fleeing, it increasingly looks like violence that to us, you know, would be unimaginable. In terms of where we are at the moment, we have just over 45,000 Ukrainians that have already been provided with accommodation in our country, and that's the largest ever humanitarian exercise that our country has ever undertaken.
But accommodation that is not suitable long term, Minister?
It's not suitable long term, you're right. But I think you need to put this in context. These are people who are fleeing a war that none of us expected to happen. And because of the situation in which we are now dealing with, we're trying to provide this accommodation really, really quickly, as every other country is. And unfortunately, as we're trying to respond back with such speed, it's hugely difficult to provide accommodation that would be of the standard that we would normally want, let alone accommodation that could be long-term. But you do, I'd suggest, have to look at our efforts and also compare it to what is happening in other parts of the world. In other parts of the world, you have those people who are fleeing the war that we're referring to, also living in a temporary accommodation, also living in military facilities, also living in facilities that are clearly not fit for the long term. But I hope and believe that in the long term, this is a problem that maybe we won't face in the way we are at the moment.
That's all well and good that we can look at that and compare ourselves to other countries and pat ourselves on the back for how we're letting refugees come into this country. And we've documented this for the last 9 months and absolutely understand what's happening with the war in Ukraine and how those people are losing homes and having to flee the war. And nobody is doubting that. But they're all being put into essentially emergency accommodation when they come into this country in the likes of hotels. We've seen them sleeping in tents, we've seen them sleeping in Dublin Airport. There's only so long they can do that before they're then looking for houses. We don't have enough houses for the people who were already homeless in this country before the war in Ukraine. We're taking 60,000 more people into the country and saying we have to give them houses as well.
So nobody, I'm not suggesting for at the moment that I or the government are patting ourselves on the back. All I'm just doing is acknowledging the huge kindness and effort that has gone in to hosting so many people so far. You're right, it is emergency accommodation that we are providing, but that's because we are dealing with an emergency. No country could have on standby the scale of accommodation that is needed to deal with a war, be able to generate that very quickly, and then be able to provide a really high level of permanent accommodation for the hundreds of thousands of people that are now fleeing a war. In relation to your broader point about what this means in the long term, yes, of course, so many people coming into our country in these circumstances will only add to the challenges that we have in the time ahead. But I guess the point I'd make in dealing with that question is what is the alternative? Is the alternative that we say, well, we're not going to host people in our country for the short term, because we're worried about what the challenge could be in the medium term and how we will deal with it. I don't want to be, and I think many of your listeners wouldn't want to be in a position, that we are refusing short-term refuge to those who are fleeing violence on an unimaginable scale. And what we need to do, which we're working so hard to do then, is make sure that hopefully as the effects of the war fade, that our country is building more homes and providing more accommodation to deal with the challenges that are there in our housing market. But please God, Owen, in the time ahead, we'll be in a situation that the people of Ukraine have won this war, that they have a country that is rebuilt, they have a country that is safe and stable, and in those circumstances then, the Ukrainians that are here in Ireland, that are now all over the world, will want to go home. And will want to go home, to go back to their homes, and to be part of the huge project which will be reconstructing a safe and stable Ukraine.
Okay, I understand you're under time constraints and you to be gone by 10:30, so I just want to get a couple more points to you, if I could, Minister. First of all, the fact that next month now we're going to see a change of Taoiseach, which is a shift in this government that we've had now for coming up on 2 years. How would you assess the government's performance over the last 2 years? Many people perceive some tensions between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at times.
The tensions that are there are the normal tensions that develop between political parties that have very proud and different political identities and traditions. But those different identities and traditions have played a huge role in this government, I believe, being greater than the sum of its parts. And there is excellent working relationships and a high level even of trust between all of us who are involved in making this government work. It's up to your listeners and up to your listeners in a few years' time to form a view regarding how we are performing. But I'd make the case for us having battled our way with the support of the Irish people through a pandemic, dealing with the effects of a war, while at the same time trying to build more homes and create a stable economy, which we know the value of. Seeing what can happen elsewhere.
We're still two years away from a general election. I understand that, and I also know that general elections are not won on polls or opinion polls, and you'll know that as well. But
I do.
Would you be cognizant of, I suppose, the rise in support for Sinn Féin? And, you know, in 2 years' time, if Sinn Féin were to come out as one of the leading parties, would Fine Gael consider going into government with Sinn Féin?
We won't serve with Sinn Féin. That is... we absolutely respect and understand why people will support different political parties, including Sinn Féin. But I made reference to the fact that, of course, there's three different political parties in this government making it work. And we do have different political traditions, but we have an awful lot in common as well. And we build on what we have in common. And I and my colleagues in Fine Gael profoundly disagree with Sinn Féin regarding their views, regarding how a modern Ireland should be led, should be grown and should be looked after. We have principally different views with regard to Europe, with regard to our economy and with regard to how our country needs to be led and needs to respond back to all of the issues that you have raised. And come the election in 2025, we'll be making the case for what we've achieved, asking for further support in the next Dáil and making the case for what we can bring to a government. And at that point, that's when we'll have the debate. But God, all my focus is on making a difference to all the issues that you and I have just discussed, rather than an election that's still some way away.
From your own personal point of view then, before we let you go, Minister, you are obviously highly regarded in Fine Gael circles, but in Europe as well as Eurogroup President. What does the future hold for yourself going forward?
I hope to have the opportunity to continue to serve in Cabinet. That's obviously a decision that will be made by the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste. And that's where all my focus is. I'm very privileged to be in public life. I love it. I love the work I do. I know how important it is. I do my best at it. I hope other finance ministers in the European Union will vote for me to continue doing the work that I do in Europe. And all of those things will become clear in the next few weeks. But all my energy for years ahead, I hope to use in making a difference to all of the serious issues and challenges that you've just correctly raised with me.
And finally, what message would you give to the people of Ireland who are struggling with this cost of living crisis, the health crisis, housing crisis, all these crises that we're hearing? What hope can you offer?
I think it's important when we talk about crisis after crisis, and your question even summarised that when we do have so many difficulties at the moment, that this is still a country that has over 2.5 million people at work in it, that is building more homes than it has before, and that has public services in our schools, in our hospitals, in our universities that are so good and can make a difference to so many, while acknowledging we always need to find ways to improve them. And while I know that so many of our needs are so acute, I am careful about you know, creating the sense that we are a country that is confronting crises everywhere and creating the sense that we're not capable of making a difference to them.
Okay.
Because I think if that sense gets hold, I think it has really dark and serious consequences for a country's future and for the kind of politics that it has. So yes, there's so much we have to do better on and make a difference in, but I believe we will, and I believe we're capable of making a real difference to the many serious problems that you've just addressed.
Okay, Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, thanks indeed for your time this morning and good morning to you. Now, some of the messages that are coming in to us, Jack says that the government is out of touch, as is Minister Pascal Donoghue. They'll get their answer in the next election. They say put your own country and the people first in terms of housing, homelessness, hospitals, etc. Indeed, with pensions and children's allowance, says Jack. Another one here, what about the middle class that are working hard to survive? It's ridiculous that the people that do nothing get everything. Help the people that are keeping the country going. It's a pity that pensions didn't rise with inflation, says another listener, saying that most of Pascal Donoghue and his words remain empty or ring empty. And there was one more message that came in as well. Help the renter and the landlords, but the mortgage get an increase in rates to make it harder to pay. And just because we are working people, it doesn't matter, but a lot of us are struggling to keep bills paid. Stop giving people money for nothing. We're getting very sick and tired of it.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare's KFM.
The Samaritans Ireland Impact Report for 2021, launched by Minister for Mental Health and Older People Mary Butler, showed volunteers spent almost 70,000 hours on the phone giving support to callers. As we know, Samaritans is the only 24-hour emotional support helpline, which covers the island of Ireland with over 2,000 volunteers in 21 branches nationwide. And Judy Murphy is Branch Director for Newbridge and Kildare Samaritans, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Owen. Thanks for having us on.
So this report is showing really the power of human connection. Volunteers answering almost 1,000 calls a day, Judy.
Absolutely. So if you just even take our branch in Newbridge, we answered 27,500 calls approximately in 2001. That was 5,000 hours on phone for our volunteers approximately. And we have just 65 active volunteers there. So the amount of time that they're putting in is really, you know, it's tremendous. If it wasn't for the volunteers, you know, there'd be nobody out there getting answered.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the volunteers, because I know that, you know, you're always looking for new volunteers to come forward, and we'll get to that in a moment.
Absolutely.
But in terms of those who are calling the Samaritans helpline, what were the most frequently raised concerns that they would be in touch about?
Right. So we have mental health is a big issue since COVID has really increased. People found it difficult to come back out after COVID. So there's a couple of different things. So some people haven't actually come back out into the community and got mixing again. Some of the services haven't opened up, like daycare centres. They're not opening as often as they did. So older people are in the house longer than they used to be. So they're calling us just to have a chat and get some voice, just to hear a voice and have contact with somebody. And then also there's very little support, mental health support, for people who have major issues. And at weekends in particular, all the services closed, so we get a lot of people who are just struggling. They're on their own. They actually, a lot of people who find it difficult to explain to their family just how difficult it is for them. So they can ring us and they can talk, and we understand the difficulties that they have, and we listen to them. It first thing in the morning can be difficult, and often as the evening closes in on them. So we just listen to them and give them that little bit of support that somebody's there. And really, it's that sort of calls that we're getting a lot of. Also, another group is young students in leaving certificate, first year students in university, who are under pressure And they're finding that they need to achieve, and they're afraid to talk at home to, you know, and they just need to say to somebody, I think I'm struggling, I'm worried about my results, I'm worried about making the grades. And again, it's just somebody to talk to and listen to. And there's great satisfaction in just giving them the ear, as we say, just the listening ear.
A call needing emotional support lasted an average of 33 minutes. There were over 19,000 calls taken from prisoners in Irish prison, and 150 new volunteers completed training. I have to say, we've covered the work that the Samaritans have done really for the last number of years, and it's a charity and an organisation that I have great admiration for. If people want to help out and volunteer, what's the process, Judy? How can people do it?
Great. So at the moment, we're just finishing off a round of recruitment in Newbridge, and we'll be starting again in March. So it would be fantastic if people could come up. You apply online at www.samaritans.org, and there's a link that brings you all the way to an application form, and it goes through to whatever centre you want to join. You can pick where you want to join. We have 21 centres in the country, 13 in the Republic and 8 up north. So you can pick your branch, fill in your form, and it goes into the system, and you'll then be contacted by the director of recruitment. As it happens, I do recruitment in Newbridge as well. So we then start the process. There's interviews and then the training. The training is excellent training. Everybody that goes through it, you learn how to cope with all the different things that you'll come up against in on your calls, and the support then for the volunteers by other volunteers. Everybody in Samaritans in the branches are volunteers. We volunteer for everything, but your first call is your listening. No matter what else you do, the priority is your listening.
That's the key point as well, because sometimes people might be thinking, I wouldn't know what to say, I wouldn't know how to react if a certain situation was brought up. But it's very important that you would have somebody there, a mentor, so to speak, that
Absolutely.
Would keep an eye on you.
You get your mentor for 6 weeks, mentored on the phone, and if you're not ready to go on your own, then it can be extended. But you're always on duty with another volunteer, and at any stage, we have a system that if you need help on the call, you can ask your other volunteer for help, and they'll support you through that. And before your duty, you're supported by what's called a leader. And after your duty, both volunteers will ring the leader and they'll talk through what happened on their duty, if they're okay supporting them, if they've had a bad call. It's all support. We have to support our volunteers as well as our callers.
Great stuff. Well, just to give out as well the free phone number, it's 116123. That's 116123. You can contact the Samaritans free at any time, 24/7, even with a mobile that doesn't have credit, because it's a free phone number. The number won't show up on your phone bill. You can email Joe, that's J-O, at samaritans.ie, or visit www.samaritans.ie, and a copy of the impact report is available on the Samaritans website as well, with the charity answering almost 1,000 calls a day, and in the Newbridge and Kildare branches answering around 27,000 calls a day as well. And Judy Murphy is 27,000 calls during the year of 2021, that is, not during the day. But thanks indeed to Judy Murphy, Branch Director for Newbridge and the Kildare Samaritans, for joining us this morning. And again, that helpline number, 116123, and if you want help or if you want to volunteer, more information on samaritans.ie.
Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie.
Welcome back to the programme. Very shortly, we're going to be discussing local issues in the Monastrevin and Kildare town areas with Sinn Féin councillor Noel Connolly. But first of all, I'm joined on the line by Niamh Gilligan. Herself and her sister Aideen are coming up, or have come up, with a novel idea to break a world record and to raise money for charity. Niamh, good morning.
Good morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks indeed for taking our call and for getting in touch with us to let us know about this event that you're planning. Tell us more. What's it all about?
Okay, well, we're looking to promote a fundraising event that we have. It's for a Guinness World Record attempt, and it's for the longest line of colouring pages. We were looking for something fun, different, and maybe thinking a little bit outside the box for a fundraiser. We strolled through Guinness World Records and came across this one. It seemed possible. The current record is 3,895, so we decided to go with that. It's a fundraiser for local charity Carer Projects. I think Paddy O'Connor has possibly been on your programme in the past. It's an Irish registered charity working in Kenya with targeted focus on child protection. As I say, we wanted something different. We thought about it. We've come up with a theme for the project, and it's called We Are Connected. Now, the idea was behind it was connecting children in Ireland with children in Kenya. We have a specially designed picture, which was designed by local graphic artist Kira Brereton from B-Box Animation. And basically, it shows two children playing with a ribbon. And the idea is once we line up all the pages, the ribbons will connect, showing that we are all connected from Ireland to Kenya.
The event then is going to happen on the 17th of March, in or around then St. Patrick's Day of next year, where you're all going to line up these pictures together, and essentially it's going to run for a kilometre, which is incredibly long. But the most important thing now is you need people to get involved. Already some schools have signed up.
Yeah, we have about 7 or 8 schools already signed up. We have our local scout group in Rathangan actually did it the other night and coloured in a number of pages for us. We have some creches and play schools on board. We have a women's shed on board. And we have some past CARA project volunteers who are now in college, some in Galway University and some in Limerick, who are actually doing some there. And we have some local families getting involved as well. Our primary focus is on the primary schools, because obviously it's a fun activity for children. It's a €2 donation per colouring page. As you said, it is a huge task. We're hoping to get over 4,000. If we do, it'll be almost a kilometre of pages once we line it all up together. Now, the idea is we're hoping to have all these back by Christmas break, so just before Christmas. As I said to you earlier on, myself and my sister are actually heading to Kenya in January, so that kind of rules out a lot of January for us. We'll have a lot of work trying to put these all together, and we hope to have it open to the public in Rathangan, weather permitting, St. Patrick's weekend, where people can come along, view what we've done. As I say, hopefully it'll be almost a kilometre of colouring pages. We're hoping to have some drone footage taking all that in, because obviously we have to provide all the backup information to the Guinness World Records so that can be recognised.
Before we talk a little bit more about the event itself and how people can get in touch if they want to donate or if they want to get involved in the project, just give us a little bit of detail about CARA Projects then and the work that's done over in Kenya and where the money would go towards.
Yeah, CARA Projects, as I said, it's an Irish registered charity working with children in Kenya. Now, their main focus is girls and women and child protection. They have a centre built out there where I think usually they have between 35 and 40 girls on site living there at any one time. Now, they also do quite a lot of work out in the community and could have 300 to 400 children on the books at any one time. As I say, they try, it's charity and it's all fully funded through volunteers. They take 2 trips out usually every year in January and February, mostly with the likes of TY and fifth year students, and that's their main fundraising event for the year. Now, their work out there is amazing. I was out there in February 2020, just before COVID hit, and it's so different to see it in real life as opposed to seeing things like that on TV. The level of poverty is just amazing. Now, the girls in the centre are very well cared for and very well looked after, and obviously the most important thing is they're safe there.
Absolutely. Well said. So all the money there going to a very worthy cause. Back to this wacky and novel idea then, which I think is great. I've never heard of anything like it before. Trying to break the world record as well for the amount of colouring pages that are all in a line. But you do need some help from children out there if they want to get involved and colour in these pages. So schools and clubs, you've issued that appeal to.
Yeah, anybody who wants to get involved, really, Owen. Families, you know, it's open to everybody.
Okay, so how do people get involved then?
Okay, we have both a Facebook and an Instagram page. We also have an email. Obviously, trying to keep everything in line with the theme. It's We Are Connected 2023, and the R is the letter R. That's on Gmail, or they can contact myself or my sister directly by phone, and we can organise to get colouring pages and details through to people.
Right, and then it's simple then, just colour in the page, send the €2 back to yourselves.
Exactly.
And that's how it works, is it?
That's it, yeah. And there's just some documentation that needs to be filled in for Guinness World Records, but it's one page which covers hopefully the whole school, so it's not a great task. It's basically to say that the pages have been submitted for a Guinness World Record.
Great, so do you think you're going to do it? Are you going to break it?
Well, with people's help, we will. We're working on it.
Good stuff. Listen, the very best of luck with it. We'll check in with you again maybe in the early part of next year to see how you're getting along, and I'm sure we'll pop along when the event is held then around the middle of March. And best of luck with it again. The email address is weareconnected with the letter R there in the middle. weareconnected2023@gmail.com, or also you can check them out on Facebook and Instagram. And Aideen Cross and Niamh Gilligan, two sisters from Rathangan, coming up with this idea, and Niamh joining us this morning. Niamh, the best of luck with it, and hopefully it goes well.
Thank you very much, Owen, and we'll be in contact closer to the time, and maybe we'll get another feature in March before we go to put this all together.
Absolutely. Well, listen, thanks again for joining us. That is Niamh Gilligan. We're going to stay in the Rathangan area now and go to Noel Connolly, who's a Sinn Féin councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, based down around Monastrevin and Rathangan. Good morning, Noel.
Morning, Owen. Good morning to your listeners.
We're going to start off, actually, in the Monastrevin area and Laca Beg. Is there a part of the road there that's sinking and maybe about to collapse?
Yeah, this issue was highlighted to me by local farmers who noticed that the road has been sinking over the last couple of years to the point where it has the effect of a ramp on the road. The locals are happy, I have to say, that the improvised ramp slows traffic on the approach to the turn for Ellistown, which is around a blind bend close by. It definitely slows locals to travel on the road, but any visitors to the area risk damaging their cars. One motorist recently damaged the body kit of their modified car. So farmers are concerned that the road could collapse, particularly with tractors and machinery crossing over it regularly. And the Municipal District Office has agreed to carry out a site visit to assess the issue and check if remedial works are required.
All right, good stuff. You're also looking to get an update on how many traffic surveys were carried out in the Kildare-Newbridge Municipal District last year and if any actions were arising out of those traffic surveys.
Yeah, the report from KCC says that there was 46 traffic counts on various roads in the municipal district areas of Kildare and Newbridge Municipal District. These counts are used to determine the condition of the roads and for surface and road maintenance. I asked if the data is available publicly, and I was told that it's uploaded to Open Data regularly, and that can be seen on data.gov.ie.
Okay, and another question then that you were wanting the answer to was around the Christmas dinner, and this is something that I know charities and organisations in Newbridge and in Kildare Town and in other places as well come together around the Christmas time to ensure that those who are in homeless services or in emergency accommodation are provided with a Christmas dinner. You brought this forward to the council.
Yeah, the report from KCC says that contact is made in December by the homeless team to all individuals and families in emergency accommodation to check their plans for the Christmas period. For those that are in facilities that are operated by Kildare County Council, Christmas dinner is supplied at those locations. For those in bed and breakfast and hotels, etc., for those that don't have an option to cook a Christmas dinner, the homeless team engages with charities in the municipal district and they ensure that everyone gets an offer of a Christmas dinner. I would like to commend the homeless team for reaching out to people at what can be a difficult time for many people to try and make it a bit easier. What I would like to know from your listeners is, does anyone know if there's a public Christmas dinner in Newbridge this year? There was in previous years. I know it was in the Open Arms Church before and in Judge Rybean's, but hopefully maybe some of the councillors can support such an initiative through local property tax allocation.
Yeah, Damien Molyneux as well, I know, does be involved there. So Damien, if you're listening, you might let us know what the situation is for this coming Christmas and get in touch with us. You were also, Noel, bringing the issue forward regarding the Pink House in Athgarvan. You wanted details whether or not it's on the derelict sites register, is it?
It is on the derelict site register. I did ask a couple of questions on it. The property is known as the Pink House or Summerhill House. It's been vacant for a number of years. The current owners came into the ownership of it in March 2015. Their ownership is a matter of public record. Anybody can pay a €5 on Land Direct and see who owns any property. I've provided the details to the council. It's very sad to see it become so run down. The potential of it is just massive. In a prominent place near a Garvin school, I'm sure many people pass it every day and wonder why it's been left to rot. It could have a community use. It could be used for an interpretive centre for the Curra, along with maybe a social enterprise like Tea Rooms. I don't know whether you've visited Emo House, but there's a fantastic Tea Rooms there, and there's others around the area. I did ask four questions to the director. I asked if it was the full property on the derelict sites register, because the one on the derelict sites register is referred to as Summerhill Stables, so I was making sure that it includes the house. I also asked if the property has been recorded or protected in any way in the past or now. It doesn't seem to be now, but I believe it was in the past. I've also asked if the council would engage with the owners to see if they have any plans for the property. And finally, then I asked how much levies have accrued from the site, so derelict site levies, and how much are outstanding to be paid. So I'm awaiting a reply from the director, and I'll be following up in coming days.
Okay, Sinn Féin councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Noel Connolly. Thanks for joining us, Noel. We're just mentioning as well that there is a public meeting taking place this evening in Newbridge Town Hall at 7:30. It's been organised by the Cost of Living Coalition to discuss the rising cost of living. It's a cross-party meeting and all are welcome. So 7:30 tonight in Newbridge Town Hall, and Patricia Ryan will be on Kildare Focus this afternoon to chat with Cuiva about that. There was another message in here from a listener saying, Owen, my husband and I were walking a month or two ago at Abbey Leek's Bog Walk when in the mud my husband saw a twinkle, picked it up. It was a gold signet ring. There are two initials on the ring. So if the owner is listening and can tell me the initials, I'd be very happy to return it to them. Maybe the owner could contact KFM and you pass on my number rather than give it out on air. Absolutely happy to do that. It's Irene actually who's been in touch. She says she's thinking it might have been used as a man's wedding ring and I'd love to return it to its rightful owner. So if you think you may have lost that in the last month or two and you were out walking at Abbey Leek's Bog Walk within that time frame and you've lost your gold signet ring, get in touch with us here at KFM. We'll pass your details on to Irene. Another message in. Thank you for the fantastic show. Enjoying it as always. Great to hear that. Another one here saying, can you be sure that the companies, that the increased revenue from the tolls is not going to a private company? This listener saying that they're trying to find out more information. I can't give any guarantee. It's kind of a grey area. As I say, those roads and those tolls are run partially privately and partially publicly by the government, Transport Infrastructure Ireland and some private companies as well. So we'll have to find out and get more information as to where the increase and the money is going to. And also Sean in Kill saying that he's loving the show and enjoying it as well. Great to have you along, Sean, and glad that you could join us this morning.